You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about project management for CMS builds with special guest, Eliza Wee. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase, go to squarespace.com/click and use offer code CLICK.
Control Click would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor of the year. Hey, Leah, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I've been binge watching House of Cards this weekend.
Ooh, you know, I saw the very first episode of it and I was like, I think this is a little too dark for me.
it's pretty dark. Yeah.
You liked Breaking Bad. I can't handle dark. I like happy TV.
Yeah, no, this one would probably make you very, very distrustful of the government.
Oh, I already am. I grew up in the D.C. area. I think it's inbred in me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, considering that it is based in Washington, that would probably be very traumatic.
So if you've been binge watching on Netflix, have you caught any of the Olympics?
No, not really. No, it's just...
Oh my gosh, I'm shocked.
For this year, I haven't really been interested in the Olympics. I don't know. Like, I just feel like there's no... I don't know. I just don't feel interested, I guess.
Well, I've been watching, not like binge watching, but definitely catching a few hours here and there. And I guess it was yesterday, or maybe it was Saturday, I saw the snowboard cross, which I didn't even know was an event.
The snowboard
but it's
cross.
Like, yeah, it's like motocross, but with people on snowboards.
Wow.
So they're going over these hills and they're catching air, and it was incredible. It was awesome.
Wow.
And I also fell in love with the biathlon, which seems like this sort of, I don't know, it's like watching a marathon, I suppose. Like watching it, you kind of have to start appreciating what it's taking the athletes to do it because it's not really exciting. But like when they have to shoot, they have to literally control their breathing. I mean, they've just gone cross-country skiing and they're trying to catch the breath and then they have to shoot and you can see how their body is like just pause. It's awesome. It's really cool. So I've been very excited about the Olympics.
I mean, because it's in Sochi, do you have to watch it super, super early in the morning or something?
Oh, no. NBC does the broadcasting, and I think they've got online streaming stuff, but I would just catch it when they show it on the television, and I avoid the announcements of who won what, because...
Oh. They announced alert.
Yeah, they totally do that. I remember a couple years ago, they tried to be like, if you don't want to know what the medal count is, mute your television right now. And they let go of that this year, which
weird.
I'm glad. It was annoying. All right, well, we've got a lot of news to get to before we talk to Eliza. So let's get started with some news in our world. We want to let our listeners know that Control Click is now sponsoring the weekly EE Help Chat with Arcistech. Every Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. Central, either me or Leah, and sometimes both of us, will be hanging out in the chat room to answer your questions. And your questions don't have to be about Expression Engine. Bring your questions about web design, dev, hosting, even branding and identity. Or just come hang out with us. Tune into our Twitter feed to get the link to the chat.
Sounds good. And in other news, Control ClickCast has also been nominated for the 2014 .NET Awards for Podcast of the Year. We're very humbled, thrilled, and thankful that our hard work is being recognized. So if you love our podcast and find the content we provide useful and interesting and fun, we'd really appreciate your vote. We'll have the link in the show notes.
I'm very proud of us.
Yes. Woo-hoo, go us.
I know. We've been working very hard for 3 years, so it feels very good.
Yes.
And thanks to everyone who nominated us in the first place to get on that short list.
Absolutely.
All right, let's switch to the world news in the world of content management systems.
Yep. So Ellis Lab has been blogging up a storm lately to amp up the upcoming 2.8 release of EE. So if you're a developer, the developer preview is now out. And if you're not a part of it, you need to email Wes Baker and include your publicly available commercial add-on link for them to review. So we'll have a link to that announcement in the show notes. But what's more interesting than that is that it looks like 2.8 is finally tapping into the memory caching capabilities of CodeIgniter natively.
Ooh.
Yes. So previously, this was only available through CE Cash. And on top of that, they also talk about improving security even more for 2.8. So it sounds like a really exciting upcoming release. We will have all the links regarding these announcements in the show notes. And in both craft and EE news, there's an upcoming LA Expression Engine meetup with our previous guest, Ben Parizek, presenting a topic called Refine or Reboot, Pushing the Limits of EE and When to Consider Craft. So that's kind of an interesting topic. Mm-hmm. That's March 19, so there's still a while to go, but if you're in the LA area, you should add it to your calendar. The link will be in the show notes.
In the last episode, we talked about a tweet from Statamic showing a pic of a set of cards. Well, it looks to be a promo contest for the recently released Statamic 1.7. To enter, you need to do something creative with their logo and or branding or the word Mouthnasium, and either tweet your entry with the hashtag #campfirecontest, or if you're not a Twitterer, email gentleman@statamic.com. The link and details will be in our show notes. And finally, if we overlook news about a CMS you favor or are interested in, let us know and we'll get it on our radar for future episodes. So today we're talking about project management for CMS projects with Eliza Wee. Eliza has over 15 years experience in the industry and runs her own company, Dogmo Studios, which specializes in design, front-end, and CMS services. A designer and developer by trade, Eliza has become a project manager by requirement, serving as the de facto PM for many of Dogmo's client projects. Welcome to the show, Eliza. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much. Nice to be here.
Awesome. So, Eliza, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. I live in Oakland, California. Sunny, sunny Oakland. I'm sorry, everyone on the East Coast. A little bit of myself. I live with two insane dogs that I love very much. And I do a lot of extracurriculars. But I think probably the formative stuff is that I quit piano when I was very young and got put into oil painting by my parents, luckily for me. So I ended up becoming, instead of a doctor, an English major, as my parents had hoped, an art major with a lot of concentration in geology.
So, interesting.
Believe it or not, has led to my design career. It's been a windy path.
You know, it's the same for me. My background's in psychology, and it's been a very windy path to get me where I am today. But it's interesting how those early choices, even when we're kids, lead to our interests later in life.
Yeah, you never know.
No, exactly. So you started out, well, as you mentioned, you have education in art, but you started as a designer for web, right, and print, and then moved into more front-end work?
Yeah, I'm kind of an odd bird in that I started in web first. So I started doing web design 100 years ago, it feels like. and basically, art leads to a really exciting career in retail and food service, which is what I was doing. And so I was working at Kinko's. Ended up in the computer side and met people who were looking for designers and got hired. And so I ended up in a Marcom team for a fiber optics firm in Berkeley. And from there, ended up doing their web stuff and then ended up becoming a web designer. And the rest is history, I guess.
Now, when we were emailing back and forth about this episode, you mentioned that you've become the de facto project manager for a lot of the CMS projects you've worked on. And in fact, the reason I reached out to you in the first place is that you and I worked on a project together, and that was kind of the role you fell into as well for that one. Now, do you like this sort of new direction in your career? Do you still do as much front end? So you're basically doing two jobs at once, or are you doing mostly project management these days?
I think the sort of beauty and irony of my job is that I really am happy whenever I find stuff that pays. So I work for myself, so I'm thrilled when I can find a need and fill it. You know, it's been a little bit random. I do a lot of design. I'm doing more print design, ironically, of recent. But I do a fair amount of project management, especially for the team that I was working with when I worked with you, Emily, simply because that's where the greatest need is. They have really good content people, but they don't understand necessarily the web. And so it becomes a really great place to interface with the clients. So they usually bring clients who have pretty extensive web needs, as does everybody these days. So it helps to have somebody who can think through the whole picture. My personal preference is to be as involved as possible throughout the entire arc of a project. It gives me a better understanding of how things can be done better, especially given usually there's always budget and time constraints. So I really enjoy it.
So I'm curious if this was something that you sort of pursued or if you fell into it when you start a project. Were you sought out or did you put yourself forward as I'm going to be a project manager, or were you initially hired for something else and then you took on that role?
You know, I think the more you interview me, the more I think, my God, I'm not an expert. So I think most of my life I've fallen into very fortunately finding what I love to do. I'm kind of nosy. I like to know, a little bit of a control freak. So I like to know how everything works. I would say that more I've fallen into it. So for instance, this one client that Emily and I worked together with, they just needed web stuff and they had a really print mentality and they still do. They're evolving and they've come a huge way, a long way since then. So they originally hired me thinking we just need a web person. And I think that a lot of times people don't understand the complexity of the web and how, especially if you're working with a CMS, how there are different parts, you know, as you've mentioned, design, front end, and then there's a whole kit and caboodle for the CMS itself. So it became kind of a natural application for those projects. Mm-hmm. For other projects, when I'm not working with that client in particular, I will wear two hats. Often I'll do the design and we'll do the project management. Sometimes we'll also do the front end, depending on what's needed. Mm-hmm. I get bored easily, so I really appreciate the diversity overall.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you feel that it's necessary to be a CMS dev or specialize in a given CMS to effectively do the project management for the build?
I think the best case scenario is to hire people smarter than myself who can handle those pieces. And the really interesting thing that has happened for me is I've been able to hone in more on the places where I'm strongest. I'm not terribly strong on the back end. So if I can hire somebody to do the CMS, that's where I'm happiest. But it really requires somebody who's a good communicator. So the really smart people that I've worked with, like Emily, are really good both at the communication side and the tech side, which I really appreciate because I can trust them to tell me what the limitations are, what we can and can't do, because almost always nothing is impossible. It just will take more time or money. So I'm not, for instance, very well versed in Expression Engine. That was my first project using Expression Engine, which is why we scrambled to hire Emily. But I feel like with the right dev in place, I don't have to know the ins and outs.
Now, you mentioned, you know, time and budget. To me, that's part of what a project manager has to oversee. What do you think of, what does project management mean to you when it comes to a project, specifically one for a content management system? You know, how much of it is keeping the budget and timeline? How much is it people management? How much is it task management? And is it different from project management on something that doesn't involve a CMS?
You know, I'm going to start backwards. I think it's not different from other project management skills. The biggest complaint, I've been talking to a few people who do project management 100% of the time, and the biggest complaint I get is that you don't carry a very big stick when you're the project manager. There's always somebody who's going to have more weight to throw around. So a lot of what I do in project management is setting expectations. Mm. So I'm Chicken Little. The sky is going to fall. Okay, the sky is really going to fall. Okay, you guys, the sky is falling all around us. So I feel like the biggest thing I do is people stuff. So I don't know if it's people versus tasks, but it's managing the expectations of the people. And if there are people in between me and the final decision makers, it's making sure that I document, okay, I've warned you 15 times that the sky is falling. So when we hit the 20th time, there will be implications, whether it's the deadline or the budget, something has to give. You can have everything, you just can't have it all at the same time for the same price. So that's been the biggest challenge. I think CMSs are really cool. They add a whole lot of complexity, and I don't think clients are always prepared for the complexity. So I've started making sure that that's something that gets spoken about very early. Some other of my projects, we will build a great site, but they'll never use the CMS, in which case it's a little bit, you know, it's added complexity that they have to pay for in the development work. And so if we can sort of suggest to them, maybe you don't want to pay for that. I hate to do that because I want everyone to be on the CMS, but I think as a good project manager and client advocate, I have to sort of put all the cards on the table so they can make the best decision.
Well, that's interesting, Eliza, because, and again, I'm referencing the project we work on. You mentioned that, you know, a big part of your role is client advocacy. Now, in that project, we had a lot of different parties. Your company was involved. My company was involved. There was like a third-party design agency. So, and you were dealing with all of us. Was client advocacy your number one priority, or was it working with the design agency or me? What was it that was the number one thing, even though maybe the client hadn't directly hired you as a project manager?
Yeah, that's a great example. So in that project in particular, I was hired by, I don't know how to describe them exactly, just because they're a little bit out of the box, but they are succinctly an advertising and branding type of firm based in San Francisco. They hired me. I quickly went and hired a dev person that I normally work with, and then we hired Emily to do the CMS, the EE component. So it was a really interesting conflict at times because my client technically is a design agency, but the overall project, and I think this is important for all levels of design, no matter what hat you wear, is keeping the end client happy. So, mm-hmm. And then above and beyond that is their users, right? So I think the way I try to keep my thoughts clear, which is really hard, was that the end user was the most important voice. So whoever their stakeholders are. And it was a little bit challenging in that I didn't have control of figuring out and setting up those expectations from the get-go. So we didn't have real clear outlines of who the stakeholders were. Well, we had some outlines on that, but not as much on the end user. So exactly what our end user looked like. There was sort of anecdotal references to that, but I didn't feel like that was as mapped out. So as much as I could, I tried to keep that in mind. The secondary goal then is to keep the top-level client happy, but really I could only affect the client who hired me, the design mm-hmm. agency. So at some times I just had to let stuff go, which was very challenging. So I would say, this isn't a good idea, or this is, and you know, and Emily, we experienced a lot of back and forth trying to get a very complex design to work. Mm-hmm. And Emily really went out of her way and made a really beautiful, elegant EE system that worked with a very, very complex front end. And I think still is quite challenging. Mm-hmm. So I think in the end, I'm not doing any favors if I don't think about the client who hired my client. Mm-hmm. And I try to keep that in mind as much as possible. And I do a lot of the Chicken Little dance, warning my client, you really need to tell them and you really need to document because we're headed for a cliff. If that's not conveyed in the manner that I want, it's out of my control. So that was an interesting challenge overall.
So I'm curious, I'd like to talk a little bit more about specifics about what you are managing. Is there any specific must-manage elements or phases of the project where you're talking about the complexity? What are the complex parts?
A couple things. One big red flag is that it has gotten better with time is getting to see the designs earlier and trying to push back. And one of the things that I'm pushing for, and I have yet to be successful with an outside designer, is that I really want people to build mobile first. And I make every argument I can under the book, and I have yet to pitch that successfully, whether that's to this design agency in particular or to my own clients, because people perceived mobile as this extra step that will cost them more money without realizing it's a really good initial step for all of the other designs. So that's a huge red flag that I'm still working on addressing, and a huge place of complexity that I think needs to change in all of my workflows. Another red flag is, for me, when I can't access the client at all. So I always try to get an in, and I usually frame it as I need a production level or some server backend person, whoever they have, who's usually really low on the totem pole, that I can access, I try to get access to, just because they can often answer really real questions about who's going to be using the CMS, what the real needs are, who the different departments and players are. And then I try to get a sense of the bigger picture, so the top level people who might come in at the very last minute and throw their weight around. So a lot of times there's a really, really high up person who's too busy to be involved. So I do my best to try to encourage that person to be involved at least in the beginning so that they are present. And then I sort of naturally follow the whole agile workflow rather than the waterfall. So I prefer to keep everybody in the loop, which is a little annoying. I'm definitely one of those evil people that over CCs. But, but, you know, but I would rather everyone know than not. So I think if I were to be succinct, the biggest thing is communication and making sure that I'm communicating with as many of the important players as possible, which usually cuts across hierarchy quite drastically. And I don't always have access to that, which is hard.
Now, I imagine that the like scope creep, and as you already mentioned, managing expectations, those are when you have to do your little Chicken Little dance.
Yeah.
But how do you take that approach in terms of dealing with these things? You've mentioned that you have to maybe alert them 20 times. In that process of alerting them, how do you phrase things? Do you try and do something to escalate it to someone else? And not only, for example, with scope creep, it's one of those things that you think comes from the client most of the time, but sometimes it can also come from the developers and the designers themselves. And so how do you talk something like scope creep and that red flag with not the client, but the other developers involved?
That's a good question. So yeah, scope creep is a huge beast. So I think one of the things that I do is above and beyond communicating, I try to put anything super important in writing. So at least in an email, and I try to include as many people as possible without being obnoxious. So one of the things that will happen is I try to make sure that there is a point person on the internal team that is my sort of go-to person that I can add to these emails so that at least there's somebody on the inside that has been informed, if possible. I don't always have that, whether it's my client or not. Like, so some, I had another project where there were decision makers who were high up who didn't want to be bothered. And so it was hard politically to include them on emails, but they really needed to be told. So that was, you know, that sort of thing is challenging. Also, sometimes you'll work on a project long enough that teams change, which is a real nightmare. Internally, I think I generally love backend and developer and server folks. They're real easy about understanding, okay, this is going to blow up in our faces. I think they have a good sense of that. So I haven't had much of a problem with that. Emily, you can tell me if I've missed something.
Well, no, I was also thinking of there would be a requirement that was documented, either whether it was reflected in the design or in some sort of planning document. And I'm sure as you learned with EE, there would be 2-3 different ways of approaching it. And so I would come to you with, well, here are the 3 ways I would suggest.
Yeah.
And it would be you who would guide me in what direction we wanted to go on. And I was just curious, like, what were you referencing to help guide me in that decision?
Oh, no, that's a good point. And that brings up documentation. So I think what you're asking and what we're talking about here is we would have things that were documented and then things would change. And we'd have to build, and the build would inadvertently change the best choice that you'd made. So what I would do to the best of my ability is just go back to my client and say, okay, this change will add this much time, as far as I can tell, versus this change. And that actually is a really useful conversation to have, because I think people will often ask, and they should ask. They should ask for everything they want, and it's our job to tell them, well, you can have it, but that actually is going to be horrible for us to implement, right? And it's going to be a big headache for you down the line when you're trying to update content because of this. So I think it's really important to tell them, because then they can say, well, but my CEO is really crazy about this one thing, so we have to do it. And then you do it, because if there's an important enough stakeholder, frankly, then you just have to do it. But yeah, so that's a good example where, and I try to do that stuff in writing as much as possible. In our emails back and forth, Emily, you had pointed out some of the more cumbersome documentation we had implemented. I tried originally to do really, really comprehensive documentation, thinking that that would protect us a little bit and provide the client with really good information in the future. But I don't know that that always gets read. So It's mostly emails.
Well, that makes me ask, how do you manage all of this communication? Like, what tools do you use for documenting and project management?
Well, you know, I would like to put out to your listeners, somebody needs to build a better suite of tools, like a suite of tools, because it's just, I used Basecamp on my projects with Emily and with a number of other clients, and I love it. But I do feel like it has its drawbacks. I have also used Asana, and I actually love Asana quite a lot for smaller projects.
And that's that task management thing, right?
Yeah, but we've been using it as sort of an informal track for bugs and tickets and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Just a to-do list. And it's real lightweight, and it's, so I feel like Basecamp adds stuff that I don't want. but it has great controls, especially with sharing with clients. And I really hate the file sharing structure in Basecamp, such that it is. So there are things in Basecamp that I wish were different. Basecamp is probably the most comprehensive tool I've used. Asana is a nice, lightweight one if I'm working with a smaller team, and it's not as heavy duty as Track, which I've also used. If you have a Track system that's built in with your wiki, that's awesome. Like if you're working with developers, I'm trying to think. Oh, and Google Docs. So I've misused Google Docs quite a bit to try to make it into the system that it's not. I feel like if someone could tie in Google Docs to a decent system, we'd have most of the pieces in place, because there's a calendar, there's good file sharing, there's good permissions, but I haven't seen anything yet.
So before we go on, we'd like to take a moment again to thank our sponsor, Squarespace, who make it really easy to get a website up and running. We know there's a lot of devs listening to the show, and if you're looking for a job in New York, they're hiring engineers. We'll have a link in the show notes. And if you're a developer who wonders whether Squarespace can work for your projects, they do have a developer platform at developers.squarespace.com. If you want to try the service out, they're giving our listeners a free trial and 10% off their first purchase. Just go to squarespace.com/click and use offer code click. Now back to the topic at hand.
So Eliza, with these tools you've mentioned, are these ones you're using just internally with your own team, or, you know, if you're hired by an agency, or do you loop the client in on these?
So this is where Basecamp shines. Basecamp is the only tool that I found that has a good set of settings so that I could have a track list for an internal team as well as a client viewable track list. Mm-hmm. So I believe with the project we worked on, I can't remember now, we used it. I certainly have used it in recent projects where the client has access to the project in Basecamp. Mm-hmm. You know, with Google Docs, and actually also I forgot to mention Dropbox, I do share that with clients, but Asana, it's almost always just, no, actually I take that back. I have shared lists with clients in Asana, but typically those are very small projects and it's a less formal team usually. So I guess the short answer is yes, I've used them with clients with varying degrees of success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still struggling to get that client we worked together on to use Basecamp regularly. Just one of the things I like about Basecamp, and I guess this would fall under project management, I just feel generally it's project communication, is that I don't always keep all my emails archived. The client doesn't always. And with Basecamp, if we keep all of our communications in Basecamp, then it's searchable and I can find it later. What Leigh and I have been doing lately in Basecamp is we only use it for the messaging with the client. Everything else is kind of internal. Oh, and then obviously like file sharing for them to like review comps and stuff. But I've always been in the situation where something will come up and I'm like, oh, we discussed that, you know, 3 months ago. I can't find the emails. I can't find the chat. And if it wasn't in Basecamp, it's kind of gone.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I do love that about Basecamp. And I do think it is a huge training curve, right? And I think, I don't know if this works for you, Emily, but I try very hard if I'm using Basecamp to force people to respond. So if they email me outside of Basecamp, I will copy and paste it into my reply.
I do the exact same thing. I'll say, as you stated in email, quote.
Yes, exactly. On this date, at this time, and then just include everybody.
Yeah, it's one of my passive-aggressive project management techniques. My other one is the kind of over-CCing people when someone's not responding. Copy in a bunch of people and be like, I haven't heard from you yet. Could you let me know something?
Yeah. I think it's a very, you know, polite way of being politic about it. You know, because it's like, hey, I don't know if my email's down, but I haven't heard from you. Just going to CC a couple people in case your email's down. No offense, because you don't want it is kind of a hard line to walk.
It is, and I think this brings up another question I hadn't really planned to ask, but it occurs to me. I asked you if you needed to be a CMS dev to do project management for a CMS, and you said, no, not really. But I'm curious, do you have to be a really calm and kind and, you know, not stressed out person? Because you always seemed really you had it together, even though I was like freaking out.
Wow, you totally fell for it. I am the most spastic, most anxious, most caffeinated, meanest person that I know. Which just might mean that my friends are all really nice. But no, I benefit greatly from the world of email and written word because mm-hmm. it gives you pause. And I think that I have learned a ton working for myself, which is fantastic. And one of those things is that this is a client services profession. So I will often swear offline to my friends, but I try not to have that come through. And it's really hard because some days you're just like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You know, you are being stupid. And you just want to tell them, you're being stupid. It's good for you to know that. But I do my best to filter that out as much as possible. And I think that that is more or less a professional choice that I need to make if I want to keep the work coming in, since clients are who pay my bills. So I try to keep that in mind at every point. The other thing that I try to keep in mind, which is very challenging sometimes when projects go awry, is that the client really knows best. It's their project. It's their mm-hmm. whatever they're selling, their widgets, right? So as much as I think I know, I really know a small piece. Mm. So, and even like in the last project we worked on, I think we had a lot of challenges because the design was so challenging, which was really, I mean, I feel like I beat my head into a wall several times on that project. But the other side of it is that those guys are such amazing content and communicators that I've learned so much from them about that. So I try to balance my frustration with, okay, there's stuff going on that these people are really good at that I don't know, and I need to not just write them off as being stupid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, when you're dealing with, I guess it really depends on whether it's your client that has directly hired you or you're working as a sub for someone else, but do you list project management as a separate line item in your proposal, whether it's to the client or to the agency, or is it sort of factored into an overall cost?
This has been evolving too. I used to not list it at all. And then as I did more and more of it, I've started making it in my estimates a line item. And the interesting thing to notice is in some projects, the project management is much larger than I ever anticipated. Mm-hmm. I'll go into a project, and this is for print too. This isn't web specific. I'll go into a project and not realize how much time is going to be spent in meetings or like just figuring stuff out because the teams are so complex. So I feel like it's still evolving. I'm learning to a lot more time for it. The really hard thing is clients don't understand what they're paying for. Mm. So this is a bad example, but if you're working on a postcard, you know, they're like, just crank it out. I don't understand why it takes so long. And with any design project, even something as simple as a postcard, you have to get from them what it is that they want so you can make the right solution, blah, 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 blah. So there's a certain amount of getting into the client's head. Maybe being a shrink would help. Like, I should put a line. I don't know, but like, so I feel like I haven't figured that out. Like, I don't know how to do it to walk that line of, I don't want to bill you for just being in meetings, but I have to cover my hour somehow. So mm-hmm. it gets a little bit creative.
Yeah, it's one of those things, I think, Leah, you would agree, we're also struggling a bit with to find the right balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like right now, I think what we ended up doing is we looked at our past projects. And because Emily and I track our time really diligently and specifically over like meetings and calls and stuff like that. And we isolated how much time it averaged out per project. And so when we're estimating for a new project, we just kind of add that average to the estimate, not necessarily as a line item, I don't think. I think we just add it as part of like, okay, we're going to anticipate that we need to do this much project management based on the average of the past projects. And then what we're trying to do is that we're trying to maybe set a limit to that and that to tell clients that if it goes over this much, then we're going to start billing you hourly.
Do you actually tell the client, okay, we anticipate this project will take 20 hours of management. And then do you actually tell them that? Or do you wrap it into another bucket?
So far, we've just sort of wrapped it into a total, but we're okay. just now starting to think about separating it in its own line item in the project proposal. And I think our average that we've come out with is that project management takes about 7% of the total hours of the project. Mm-hmm. And so when we're doing a proposal, we figure out, you know, what the cost is going to be. We do the math of 7% and we put that in. And then we're anticipating that when we next do a kickoff where we've done this line item approach, because this is just an idea, we haven't done it yet, that during kickoff we'll say, as your signed document indicates, you get 7% or you get X number of hours of project management. You know, we'll keep you posted about, you know, where that's being spent. And, you know, then it goes to hourly.
Oh, no, I love that, actually. I would actually probably up it to 10% just to be safe. But it would be kind of an interesting thing to go into a project and say, this is what I believe this project will take. And typically it takes 5 to 10% of my time to manage the project. So this is my anticipation of those additional hours. But it is hard, right? Because clients start freaking out when you're like, because if it's a huge project, if it's a 100-hour project, then you're talking... Actually, that doesn't sound that bad, 10 hours. But clients will start complaining.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I'm certainly concerned about it, but I'm more concerned about the fact that in the past, I haven't been too good about paying attention to how much time I'm spending on project management. And that when I looked at it, I was shocked at the amount of money I was losing. Because, and I think Dogmo, your company is like this as well, is that we spend a lot of time getting to know our clients and making them feel that we're their partner. And that involves some hand-holding. It involves a lot more calls than you might expect. It, you know, it has nothing to do with whether they're tech savvy or not. It has to do with getting to understand their business and how their needs may evolve from the beginning of the project to the end.
No, this is a great, and this isn't strictly project management, but this is a great sort of, I don't know how to balance this piece, because it is one of those things that comes up time and time again, and I don't want to rip clients off, and I want to be really transparent, and I try to be very transparent in my billing, like probably more granular than I need to be, but at the same time, it's almost easier to hide those numbers, right? And I'm not advocating for this, but it's almost easier to put that call into the bucket of postcard or web development or design, you know, because people are willing to pay for those things, but they don't understand the value of good project management. So I do have that challenge. And it's interesting. I was talking to somebody else about this who was talking about it as to bill the way lawyers do. And lawyers often bill in 6-minute increments because it becomes a decimal point and they bill for everything. Mm-hmm. But I don't... For better or for worse, I don't think we have the perceived value that we can do that. The other place that I've tried to factor that in as much as possible, which is hard to do, is in the hourly rate. So I think I sometimes have shot myself in the foot by not including enough in the hourly rate, because there is that incidental time, because it's really important that you do all this work, but you can't charge, like so much of your time is not billable. Mm-hmm. I think, Emily, what you're talking about. So... But we need to survive. So it's one of those things where people freak out about the hourly rate, but that's one of the costs associated, I think, in it.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. It's a fine line of wanting to value yourself and value the work that you're doing, as well as respecting the client's perception of that value, which may not be as educated as it should be. With that, I think that's the nature of our relatively new industry. So, you know, I want to kind of focus a little bit on CMSs specifically as we close up. So what types of CMSs have you worked with in any capacity? And then which ones have you done the most project management with?
Sure. I basically have worked in Drupal, WordPress, and now Expression Engine. Expression Engine, I've only worked in the one project. I have to say, Emily, I do love it. Like watching you work in it and seeing everything you could do with it and seeing how intuitive it is has made me a believer. I think that it's hard to sell Expression Engine and then Joomla, for instance, because there's a cost attached. So clients, you know, and it's one of those things where you want to be like, well, but this, if this is the best solution for you, this is the best solution for you. But as a result, Drupal and WordPress are by far where I do most of my work. Mm-hmm. And then the way that I approach it is WordPress is typically much less expensive to develop for. So the smaller budgets tend to go for WordPress and even some of the larger budgets. So at this point, I would say most of my work is probably still in WordPress with a good chunk of it in Drupal.
Mm-hmm. You know, comparing WordPress and Drupal, and if you want, the EE project we worked on, is project management different for each of those CMSs? And I mean, I know you mentioned in the beginning you don't have to be a CMS dev to do good project management, but I imagine that each CMS has its own nuances that you have to plan for on some level.
Yeah, and this is where I lean really heavily on the devs. So there is different planning that happens. I mean, all of them, I believe, if done right, work from content out. So you try to distill down to the smallest piece of content, and then there are templates that incorporate that content, so it's not static pages. So I feel like there needs to be some mapping of content that happens early on, and some mapping of template types or something that is the same across the board. They are slightly different. And one of the things about Drupal that's like EE from when I worked with you, Emily, is that there's a myriad of ways to approach it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with Drupal and EE, you have to have a better understanding of the CMS to really fully incorporate it. You do with WordPress as well. And I work with some really smart people who are doing really amazing things with WordPress and custom fields. But it's a little bit more flexible and a little easier to wing it with WordPress, I think. Mm. So with Drupal, and I think if I were to do EE again, I think the documentation is a little bit more stringent on the dev side. Like, I think it's good to have that if we can.
Now, if you're in a position to recommend the CMS, like you're involved really early on, how do you choose the solution that will work for the client? I mean, assuming that you have full knowledge of the project and you know what solutions you're skilled with or your team is skilled with, does project management enter into that decision at all?
I think it does. I think one of the largest things is budget, to be really honest. Mm. I can often find developers to do WordPress for much less money than Drupal or I think even EE. There aren't many of you out there that do EE, which is good for you guys. You know, to be honest, a lot of times it depends on what the client is. Well, I go back and forth on this. I feel like WordPress can be quite annoying and not very intuitive. And it's harder to change the interface, that sort of dashboard, unless you have a good dev. And fortunately, I do, to try to make it a little bit more, a little less cumbersome. So it seems like there's more customizability, I don't know if that's a word, in Drupal and in EE. And I was really impressed with, Emily, the way that you were able to build out an interface in EE that tried to protect the client from themselves.
Yeah.
Which I think you can do pretty easily, or not easily, but Drupal is built for that a little bit more than WordPress, I believe. But having worked with a couple of really skilled WordPress developers, I've been really impressed at what you can do and what things you can change. And at the end of the day, if they have a comfort level with one of the tools, even if it's I've used WordPress and I kind of hate it, I try to suggest that they don't change. So if they're already on Drupal, even though Drupal 8 is going to be a big change, like I'm trying to keep them on the same platform because I feel like if you're in a big institution, it's really hard for people to change. Mm-hmm. If there isn't sort of any historic institutional memory that we need to keep in mind, then I love it. Like I love having the conversations with people. And as much as I can, I try to get people to actually touch the back end, you know, like set up a dev site and look. That would be the dream, right? And be like, look, what do you like? You know, right. Take a look at it. But that can be hard because people don't have time. I don't know. I have to say, Emily, I was really impressed with EE. So I do always try to mention it. But I think the budget usually comes into play with that one.
Yeah, it is always a challenge. You know, whenever it comes down to recommending a CMS, I always have to check myself because no matter how much I value my clients, I always want to pick what I know I can do the best job with,
right.
Which may or may not be the best tool for the client.
Well, but at the end of the day, I feel like we are really lucky in that there are so many amazing tools out there and they just keep getting better. Mm-hmm. And so if you're really good at it and if you can pull out of whatever CMS you're working in the best product for your client, I don't think it matters. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's sacrilegious to say because at the end of the day, you can build a really great site with any of these tools. So, and I have friends who are very, very good at WordPress and who do really incredible, really cool things with it. So even though in my mind, WordPress is the least technical solution out of the three, with a really, like, I will go with whatever my developer says at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so if the project is going one way or another and the developer has a strong feeling, you know, I'd listen to that.
So moving forward, Eliza, do you think you're going to take on more project management or keep it the same what it is now?
You attribute much too much control over my I will do what comes. I have been pleasantly surprised at how much I like people. When I started this, you know, I thought, oh, God, I love what I do because I sit behind a computer all day. But I have to say, I like running my own business, the project management and the sales component are so necessary. Mm-hmm. So there are all these things that I used to hate. And now I'm like, you know what? These are the things that make the project really juicy and interesting, mm-hmm. right? Like if you can get into someone's head and understand why they need something. And the tough side is a lot of times it's not me, right? Like, so if you're like, you don't actually need a website redesign. What you need is content, right? So I feel like that's the piece that I love about project management. It gets you to the nut of the problem, which I think all good design should mm-hmm, do, mm-hmm. right? and which is really hard sometimes because you really want to pitch a big, you know, huge website redesign that's going to keep you in the money for a few months or whatever. A lot of times that's just somebody at the top who thinks that that's going to fix things. And really it's that they have some god-awful brand or some, you know, mistargeting of their content or, you know, or something, right? That's more basic that they need to come back to. So, and I've had people who are like, let's do the website first and then the logo and the rebrand. And then, you know, I'm like, you know, the website is really a component of your brand. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be the thing that drives your brand. So those pieces I really love. And I think the more holistically I can work, the happier I am. So I think as a result, I'll always have to do project management. In the future, when I'm really rich, I would love to hire a project manager, just like I would love to hire a sales team. But that's just like unicorns and rainbows. So.
And so before we let you go, Eliza, we like to let our listeners know our guests a little bit better. So we took a cue from Inside the Actor's Studio and created a list of 10 questions. Are you ready?
I think so. I'll sit down.
All right. So quickly, Mac OS or Windows?
Oh, Mac.
What is your favorite mobile app?
My favorite mobile app? Oh, this is terrible. I don't use apps a whole lot. I believe in HTML5, but I'm a Candy Crush addict, which I'm very ashamed of.
Awesome. So what is your least favorite thing about social media?
The fact that I'm really heavily addicted to it.
What profession other than yours would you like to attempt?
Oh, God, there's so many. I wish I was a marine biologist.
That's cool.
Kind of.
What profession would you not like to do?
Oh, there's a lot, and I've done a lot of them. I am glad that I don't know how to clean a fryer, and I am glad that I don't have to do anything that involves bodily fluids.
Who is the web professional you admire the most?
There's a lot. There's a lot of those famous web people that I follow on Twitters. I'm going to say it even though he's kind of a jerk. Mike Monteiro.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got a persona and stuff, but he has written some really great stuff and is consistently amusing to follow on Twitter.
So what music do you like to work or code to?
Oh, I'm a kind of obsessive person, so I go through phases. I was on a Janelle Monáe kick for all of last year, I think. And now, because De La Soul just released their entire discography online on the 14th, I can't stop listening to them.
Yeah, I downloaded those myself.
I know.
What's your secret talent?
My secret talent? Oh, geez. I can eat an immense quantity of food. And to go along with that, I think that if you set something in front of me, I will demolish it, whether it's food or whatever, to my unhealth.
What's the most recent book you've read?
Well, I just finished the Divergent series, which is coming out in a movie form soon, I think. And I am working on a couple other books, but they're going slowly.
And lastly, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Well, the new Star Trek or the old Star Trek?
Whichever.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's a new Star Trek, the new Star Trek is John Cho.
Nice.
If it's just the old, probably Star Wars.
All right, cool.
Sounds good. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Eliza.
Thank you so much. That was fun.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Oh, I am online all over the place. If you want my unfiltered Twitter feed, it's Ewee, E-W-E-E. If you want the filtered stuff, it's Dogmos Studios, Dogmostudios. And I'm also at Dogmos Studios on Facebook, and you can go to dogmo.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Squarespace and Pixel and Tonic.
We also want to thank our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ControlClickCast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we'll be talking about organizing conferences with Ariane Stiles and Christopher Schmidt, the masterminds behind Environments for Humans. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.